Well, this, these two chapters really address a lot of ugliness, don't they? Lust, murder, deceit, hatred, anger, all wrapped up in one family. In chapter 13, it came to pass after this that Absalom, son of David, had a fair sister whose name was Tamar. Amnon, the son of David, loved her. Amnon was so vexed that he fell sick for his sister Tamar. Now, he's got a real problem, doesn't he? And understand, this is, they have the same father, different mothers. But lust has overwhelmed him. It has taken control of his life. And, you know, sin will do that. Temptation will do that. How do you manage that? When you have this thought, how could he have managed that? I go back to what they said to King David about Bathsheba. That's somebody's daughter. That's somebody's wife. Right here, you know, well, man, that is your sister. And we should, you know, we call each other brother and sister around here, but we really should treat others as brothers and sisters. And if we look at people as our brother or our sister, and, you know, then it takes away a lot of those ugly temptations. And it should, you know, there should have never been an idea in his mind. But he's consumed with lust. He's vexed, the Bible says. Right? Yeah, and that's what happens here. Because it's just a temptation. It's just an obsession, you know, to want something so much. And like Brother Henry says, you think you want something and then you get it. It doesn't satisfy you. It does not meet that need that you thought you were going to meet with that. And that's the reality of all sin. You know, the temptation is there and the attraction is there, but then in the end, it wasn't all that we thought it would be. And she was a virgin, it says in verse 2. Amnon thought it hard for him to do anything to her. So he had kind of dismissed the idea. He thought, well, it won't work. It's not going to happen. And that was it. Right there, we're good. I mean, he's dealt with his temptation. He's erased it from his mind, or at least the possibility of acting on that lust. And then in verse 3, Amnon had a friend. Whoa, what a friend, huh? We gotta choose our friends wisely. Because look at this, and we'll look at it, but his friend will ruin lives just trying to be a good friend, in quotations. You know, he's not a good friend, but he's the one who brings it up. His name was Jonadab, son of Shimei, David's brother. Jonadab was a very subtle man. So this is his cousin. And he was a subtle man. That's not a good thing in this regard. He said to him, why art thou being the king's son lean from day to day? Man, you got it made. What's wrong with you? You got a good life. You got a good future. What? You look terrible. You got such a poor outlook and a poor attitude. What's wrong? Will thou not tell me? And Amnon said, I love Tamar, my brother, Absalom's sister. I love her, he says. That's interesting. I love her. That's good. You should love your sister. You should love your brother. You should love your family. You should love others. Jonadab said, verse 5, lay thee down on thy bed, make thyself sick. When thy father cometh to see thee, say to him, I pray thee, let my sister Tamar come and give me meat, dress the meat in my sight, that I may see it and eat it at her hand. So we've got deceit and conspiracy. Fraud, really, isn't it? And it was somebody else's idea. He had moved on. He was still not excited about it. You know, he was still kind of discouraged by it, but he had moved on. He said, well, it's not going to happen. And along comes Jonadab and develops this idea, this conspiracy to get it done. So he did. He laid down. He made himself sick. The king came by to see him, and he said, please have Tamar. You notice this in verse 6? Let Tamar, my sister. Earlier he said it was Absalom's sister. It is my sister now. So as a parent, you think, well, this is good. The kids are getting along. Verse 7, David sent home to Tamar, saying, go now to thy brother Amnon's house, dress and meat. Tamar went to her brother Amnon's house. He was laid down. She took flour, kneaded it, made cakes in his sight, did bake the cakes. She took a pan, poured them out before him. He refused to eat it. And he said, have out all men from me. And they went out, every man from him. Verse 10, Amnon said to Tamar, bring the meat to my chamber, to my bedroom, that I may eat of thine hand. Tamar took the cakes which she had made, brought them to the chamber to Amnon, her brother. When she had brought them to eat, he took hold of her and said, come lie with me, my sister. She answered him, nay, my brother, do not force me. And look at her idea here. No such thing ought to be done in Israel. She's thinking on a much larger scale, isn't she? This wickedness shouldn't be done in the whole country among God's people, much less in the family. Do not thou this folly. Verse 13, and I, whither shall I cause my shame to go? As for thee, thou shalt be as one of the fools in Israel. Said, have you thought about this? I hadn't told this story in a long time, but there was a lady who came to me one time, and she said, she called me over. I went to counselor, family was there. We went out on the back porch and talked, and she said, I love you. And I said, well, I love you too. She said, no, you don't get it. She said, I love you. And I said, well, let's just think about this. Okay. By the way, this is before I came here. So people are starting to look around. And so I said, let's just take this down the trail. Pianist runs away with preacher. Have you ever heard that story before? I said, it's ridiculous. I said, look, I get what you're saying. You know, here's the thing. Your husband doesn't pay attention to you. I do. Your husband doesn't listen to you. You call me, I come over, or I answer the phone, I come over and I listen to you. And I said, it's not what you think it is. This is you talking to your pastor that is a man and is listening to you. If your husband would listen to you, you know, you wouldn't be, you know, having this confusion. And I said, I love you, and I, you know, this stays between us, and y'all don't know who she is, so it's still just between us. But understand, this is folly, right? That's what Tamar said. This is folly. Like, this is going to ruin both of our lives. Just the idea, you know, if you take this out the whole way. And just as simple as that, guys, if we look down the road, whether that's a major purchase that God doesn't advise, whether that's a relationship that God is against, whatever, a move, like people relocate, but they don't think down the road. So many times people will say, well, you know, I got this opportunity to go to, you know, another state. And then after they're there and they buy a house and they go, well, there's no churches here. Well, you got to think that down the road. We got to look at that ahead of time. And then they spend, you know, years trying to find a church that will meet their spiritual needs. We've got to think it through. And that's what she says to him. You haven't thought this through. Like, there's no way this comes out well. But in her reason, she says, why don't you just go to the king? Right? I'm not your sister. I'm your half-sister. I mean, that's the same dad. But you know, this in those times, in that culture, we could make this work. Just have him, you know, give me to you. I'll be your wife. That's not a problem. Go to the king. He will not withhold me from thee, verse 13. But it's got to be done in order. We're not going to, you're not going to force yourself on me, and then it just gets erased. Verse 14, howbeit he would not hearken to her voice. Why? Impatience. That's what lust does. The lust just over, it just comes on, and it's so strong, and if we don't resist it, and I go back, because he had kind of dismissed it. He still wanted it, but he had dismissed it. Can't happen. Until Jonadab comes along and says, oh, we can make this work. It'll be all right. We could just use some deceit. You got to be careful. Not all advice is good advice. And this advice Jonadab gave was terrible advice. Now Tamar's giving good advice. She didn't say, you're terrible, I don't want anything to do with you. She says, ask the king. But the king says, okay, no problem. She's thinking about, remember, this shouldn't be done in Israel. This is somebody who's, you know, connected. She's spiritual. She's got that relationship with God. She's on the right course. But he, being stronger than her, forced her and lay with her. Verse 15, and Ammon hated her exceedingly, so that the hatred wherewith he hated her was greater than the love wherewith he had loved. And then, guess what it didn't do? It didn't satisfy him. It did not give him that fulfillment, that satisfaction that he expected. He had built it up in his mind. It was going to be so wonderful. And in the end, it wasn't. And that's the disappointment of sin every time. And so it's changed him. And he told her, get out. Arise, be gone. Why? Well, number one, she refused him. Number two, he's committed an awful act against her. And she knows it better than anybody, what his sin is, what his crime is. And so now he's afraid of her, exposing him. He's mad at her because she rejected him. And he's disappointed with himself because he's acted on this impulse that didn't bring him the satisfaction he thought. What's that? And he knew better. Verse 16, she said, there is no cause. This evil in sending me away is greater than the other that thou didst unto me. But he would not hearken to her. She said, don't just run me out of here. He called his servant, verse 17, and said, put now this woman out from me and bolt the door after her. Isn't that ugly? Hateful. She had a garment of divers colors upon her, for such robes were the king's daughters that were virgins appareled. His servant brought her out, bolted the door after her. Tamar put ashes on her head and rent her garment of divers colors that was on her, and laid her hand on her head and went on crying. Verse 20, Absalom, her brother, said to her, hath Amnon, my brother, been with thee? Oh, so it wasn't a secret. He had been discussing this idea for a while, hadn't he? He had been entertaining the idea of this crime, this sin, this attack. Absalom says, but hold now thy peace, my sister. He is thy brother. Regard not this thing. So Tamar remained desolate in her brother Absalom's house, isolated. Now, So there's an idea here, and I want to be very clear about this. Absalom was not saying, let's keep this a secret, let's brush it under the rug, let's not ruin his reputation, let's not bring, this to the king's house, the reputation to the king's house. Very clearly, when someone does something like this, whether it's to an adult or a child, we don't cover it up. It's wrong to cover it up. And, I get all kinds of these newsletters and stuff like that, talk about the stuff that goes on all around the country. I have never, nor will I ever, cover up a sex crime just to keep the reputation of the church protected. Never. And yet we see it all around the world. We can't let the reputation of the church be harmed. No, the reputation of the church ought to be, we found justice for the victim, not we protected the attacker. But that's not what Absalom's saying. Absalom's saying, we'll take care of this in the family. King David heard of all these things, and he was very wroth. Can you imagine how angry you would be? Verse 22, Absalom spake to his brother Amnon, neither good nor bad. In other words, he wouldn't talk to him. Absalom hated Amnon because he had forced his sister Tamar. So David is angry. Tamar is hurt. Absalom is filled with hate. And not only is he filled with hate, Amnon is too. He's got the disappointment in himself or in the fact that she did not, that his lust was not as fulfilling as he thought it would be. It came to pass after 2 full years. Y'all ever think about that when it just says 2 full years? Any other place in the Bible you can remember 2 full years? Anybody? Joseph? He said, hey, when you get out, remember me with the king, right? 2 full years Joseph remained in prison. And then all of a sudden he was out. But anyway, so after 2 full years, Absalom had sheep shears in Bezor, which is beside Ephraim, and Absalom invited all the king's sons. Absalom came to the king and said, behold, now thy servant has sheep shears. Let the king, I beseech thee, and his servants go with thy servant. And the king said to Absalom, nay, my son, let us not all now go, lest we be chargeable to thee. And he pressed him, howbeit he would not go. But he blessed him. He said, look, good, I'm not against what you're doing, but I'm not going. And that's okay to say, isn't it? Verse 26, Absalom, then said Absalom, if not, I pray thee, let my brother Amnon go with us. And the king said to him, why should he go with thee? And Absalom pressed him that he let Amnon and all the king's sons go with him. Any of y'all familiar with that? Right, these kids that just, and these are grown-ups, these are grown kids. They just keep asking and keep asking and keep asking. And the reply comes back, I've already answered you and I'm not changing my answer. I'm not going to change my mind. And so he just kept pressing, and David says, okay, take your brothers with you, go. All the king's sons can go, but I'm not going. Verse 28, Absalom had commanded, so it's premeditated. He had commanded his servants, saying, mark ye now, when Amnon's heart is merry with wine, and when I say to you, smite Amnon, kill him. Fear not, have not I commanded you, be courageous and be valiant. So again, conspiracy. The servants of Absalom did unto Amnon as Absalom had commanded. And all the king's sons arose, every man got him up upon his mule and fled. What? And because you know further about Absalom, what do you think was in the hearts and minds of the other sons, the other brothers? Why? Because Absalom was, he was after the throne, wasn't he? And eventually he would take the throne, briefly. But they always saw in Absalom, you know, he's, oh, Tamar, I'm going to take care of it. You know, he's the one that's going to take care of things. He's the fixer. And he would, you know, later on we see him in the gate of the city, oh, working things out and, you know, helping everybody and really, you know, showing leadership skills. But there's a motive. And the motivation behind it is he wants power. He wants to be the king. He wants to take the throne from his father. And so all of his brothers, after Amnon's killed, they figure they're next. They got up and took off. And it came to pass while they were in the way, tidings came to David, saying, Absalom has slain all the king's son. There's not one of them left. That's what gossip does, isn't it? Exaggerates, makes it worse than it was. The king arose, tore his garment, lay on the earth, and all his servants stood by with their clothes rent. Verse 32, Jonadab, son of Shimei, David's brother, answered and said, let not my lord suppose they have slain all the young men, the king's sons. Amnon only is dead. By the appointment of Absalom, this has been determined from the day that he forced his sister Tamar. And by the way, king, I was involved in that because I'm the one that gave him the idea. That's not in there, is it? He left that part out. And that's what happens when people tell on you. They don't tell their contribution to the crime. Verse 33, now therefore let not my lord the king take this thing to heart to think that all the king's sons are dead, for Amnon only is dead. But Absalom fled, and the young man that hath kept the watch lifted up his eyes and looked, and behold, there came much people by the way of the hill beside him, behind him. Jonadab said unto the king, behold, the king's sons come. As thy servant said, so it is. It came to pass, as soon as he had made an end of speaking, behold, the king's sons came and lifted up their voice and wept. And the king also and his servants wept very sore. So now this family is divided, isn't it? It's broken. Why? See, when David took Bathsheba and had her husband killed, and the son that was born of their adultery died, but God told David something. He said, the sword will not depart from your house. There's going to be division in your house. So we have conspiracy, deceit, you could say rape or adultery. Fornication, anyway, certainly sexual crime, and then murder. So where did this come from? It came from the father, from King David. He had done the same thing. Little differences, but that pattern that was in David's life of sexual lack of control, right? This fire that was always burning in David for women has, you know, carried on to his son. Now that son's dead. It came to pass, verse 36, or let's go to verse 37. Absalom fled and went to Talmai, the son of Ammihud, king of Geshur. David mourned for his son every day. The note here to understand is he had gone to his mother's homeland. Remember, they all had the same dad that was David, but they had different moms. Well, so Absalom has fled to his mom's homeland. So Absalom fled and went to Geshur and was there 3 years. And the soul of King David longed to go forth unto Absalom. He was comforted concerning Amnon, seeing he was dead. So what do we see here about the hurt that King David had over the act of his son? Some guilt, right? They follow in our footsteps. That's their pattern. So David has some guilt. But time had, 3 years, time had made it a little bit better. Mm-hmm. So he should have been more discerning when Amnon came to him and said, send Tamar. Possibly. So he did feel like he was part of the problem. Right. And so after 3 years, now David is, he's no longer so much concerned about losing the one. He's concerned that he's lost two. So he starts wanting Absalom to come home. Chapter 14, Joab, son of Zeruiah, perceived the king's heart was toward Absalom. But what did David do about that? What did David do to get Absalom to come home? He wanted him to come home. He missed him. He wanted to have what family he had left together. But what did he do about it? Nothing. But Joab, his right-hand man, sent to Tekoa and fetched thence a wise woman, said to her, feign thyself to be a mourner. Put on now thy mourning apparel. Anoint not thyself with oil, but be as a woman that had a long time mourned for the dead. Come to the king, speak on this manner to him. So Joab put words in her mouth. And when the woman of Tekoa spake to the king, she fell on her face to the ground and did obeisance and said, help, O king! The king said to her, what aileth thee? She answered, I am indeed a widow woman, and my husband is dead. Thy handmaid had two sons. They strove together in the field, and there was none to part them. But one smote the other and slew him. And behold, the whole family is risen against thine handmaid. They say, deliver him that smote his brother, that we may kill him for the life of his brother whom he slew. And we will destroy the heir also. So they shall quench my coal which is left, and shall not leave to my husband neither name nor remainder upon the earth. So in their effort to get justice, she says, they're going to take away what family I've got left. And not only they're taking away the family, but they're taking away the family name. That's it. You know, if they kill my son and his heir, the grandson, if they'd kill both of them, there's nothing left of my family. That's the end of the line. Verse 8, the king said to the woman, go to thine house. I'll give charge concerning thee. Give me some time to think about this. The woman of Tekoa said to the king, my lord, O king, the iniquity be upon me and on my father's house, and the king and his throne be guiltless. I'm not going to hold you responsible for your decision. Let it rest on me. Blame me for it. The king said, verse 10, whosoever saith aught to thee, bring him to me, and he shall not touch thee any more. Then says she, I pray thee, let the king remember the Lord thy God, that thou wouldest not suffer the revengers of blood to destroy any more, lest they destroy my son. And he said, as the Lord liveth, there shall not one hair of thy son fall to the earth. So she keeps pressing him and pressing him. I need an answer today. He said, look, I'll put an order and nobody will mess with you. But it's not enough. I need an answer today. Verse 12, the woman said, let thine handmaid, I pray thee, speak one word to my lord the king. He said, say on. So he's already given judgment, hasn't he? Your sons, nobody's going to touch your son. Nobody's going to touch you. And she pressed him. Okay, nobody's going to touch your son. So now she got what she wanted. Right? Now she's gotten the judgment. Verse 13, the woman said, "Wherefore then hast thou thought such a thing against the people of God? The king does speak this thing as one which is faulty, and that the king doth not fetch home again his banished. For we must needs die, and are as water spilt on the ground, which cannot be gathered up again. Neither doth God respect any person, yet doth he devise means that his banished be not expelled from him." Remember, this idea, this is the land of Israel, this is the people of God, and we shouldn't exile, we shouldn't push them away. "Now therefore that I am come in, speak of this thing unto my Lord, the king. It is because the people have made me afraid, and thy handmaid said, I will now speak unto the king. It may be the king will perform the request of his handmaid. For the king will hear to deliver his handmaid out of the hand of the man that would destroy me and my son together out of the inheritance of God. Then thine handmaid said, the word of my lord the king shall now be comfortable, for as an angel of God, so is my lord the king to discern good and bad. Therefore the Lord thy God will be with thee." So he senses, and she called him out, right? You're faulty in your judgment. So he does feel that judgment against him. Here I am solving other people's problems, and look at the problem I've got in my family. And she calls him out. You know, you've got something going on. You need to fix it. You're the guy. Verse 18, the king answered and said unto the woman, "Hide not from me, I pray thee, the thing that I shall ask thee." The woman said, "Let my lord the king now speak." Verse 19, the king said, "Is not the hand of Joab with thee in all this?" Joab sent you here to do this. This is all a ruse, isn't it? You have done all this. Joab's the one behind the whole thing, isn't he? Verse 21, the king said to Joab, "Behold, now I have done this thing. Go, therefore, bring the young man Absalom again." Joab fell to the ground on his face and bowed himself and thanked the king. And Joab said, "Today thy servant knoweth that I have found grace in thy sight, my lord, O king, and that the king hath fulfilled the request of his servant." So, the thing we see here again about Absalom is he's building in popularity, isn't he? The king's right-hand man wants Absalom back. So, you know, the king's got to see this wave coming where Absalom is being preferred over David. So he brought Absalom again. Verse 24, the king said, "Let him turn to his own house. Let him not see my face." So Absalom returned to his own house and saw not the king's face. Verse 25, in all Israel there was none to be so much praised as Absalom for his beauty. From the sole of his foot to the crown of his head, there was no blemish in him. So people see Absalom, it's his personality, it's his appearance. He's attractive. People like him. Unto Absalom there were born three sons, one daughter whose name was Tamar. And she was a woman of fair countenance. So he's named one of his daughters after his sister. Verse 29, Absalom sent for Joab to have sent him to the king, but he would not come to him. Verse 30, therefore he said to his servants, "See, Joab's field is near mine. He has barley there. Go set it on fire." And Absalom's servant set the field on fire. Joab rose and came to Absalom's house and said, "Wherefore have thy servant set my field on fire?" Absalom answered Joab and said, "I sent to thee, saying, come here, that I may send thee to the king to say, wherefore am I come from Geshur? It had been good for me to have been there still now. Let me see the king's face. If there be any iniquity in me, let him kill me. Absalom says, you wouldn't return my calls. But I got your attention, didn't I? So we see the heart of Absalom. This manipulation and this power. I say, in these two chapters, we see every ugly characteristic of man, don't we? So Joab came to the king, verse 33, and told him. And when he had called for Absalom, he came to the king and bowed himself on his face to the ground. And the king kissed Absalom. So we see finally at the end of these two chapters, it looks like we've found a little reunification of the family. But the truth is, there's still division and heartbreak among them. Any questions, comments, criticisms, complaints? Y'all hot now? Let's take a break.